Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. Stone, quite a week we've had so far.
It has been a very interesting 7 days. You know, only a week ago we celebrated our independence from the United Kingdom. And today I am delighted to announce our collaboration in that we can tell people that we have our affiliates in Manchester and London, and UK Business Radio X is up and running. You can go visit at uk.businessradiox.com. So that's going to be fun stuff.
That's right. So our guy is Ian Brody.
Ian Brody. And, you know, his mission is so totally consistent with everything we're trying to accomplish. He's out there trying to help UK business professionals get the word out about the good work that they're doing for their market, their community, and their profession. And we've already captured a couple of stellar interviews and are looking forward to a lot more.
And that accent will class up our operation.
Absolutely. We got to find a local voiceover person or something to introduce those shows. Do you think Kevin could do that?
British, I don't know.
But we have a studio full today. A little bit later in the program, we are going to get a chance to visit with Steve Capon with Training Pros, who, of course, underwrite our Learning Insight show, which airs on Wednesdays at 10 a.m. here at the Sandy Springs studio. We're going to visit with Perry Bell with Solar Energy USA /Net Zero. And we're going to get a chance to visit with Brian Simon with Expedited Delivery and Logistics. But first up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce founder and president of Response Mind Interactive, and no stranger to the Business Radio X microphone, Lee. He has been in the studio before.
That's right.
I know this because I have the T-shirt. But please join me in welcoming to the show Mr. Ken Robbins. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Stone.
You know, and the shirt wears well, even with a sport coat. I'm impressed.
Thanks very much.
So what you been up to since we talked to you last? What have you guys been out there doing for folks?
Oh, just trying to grow the company. As you know, I have a marketing services company, and Response Mind Interactive. We use the internet to help clients, usually large national clients, get more customers and more revenues.
And that's through inbound marketing?
Yeah. Yes, very much through inbound marketing. Well, also through media buying. Mm-hmm. Inbound marketing usually describes lots of content,
right.
But we do place a lot of media and optimize a lot of media. And we also have a call center. So there's
You have a call center as well.
We do. There's inbound and outbound efforts there.
So what kind of media are you buying? Has that changed? Are you buying? You're putting clients on different platforms than maybe you were a year or 2 years ago?
Well, in the last 3 or 4 years, it certainly has evolved. I would say this is our 13th year in business. In the first 5 or 6 years, probably 80% of all of our efforts were in search engines because those are so effective.
In optimizing people's websites?
Well, and in buying AdWords and keywords, mm-hmm. and Bing and Yahoo and so forth. And
Alta Vista?
Yeah. That's right. Wow. Now that is a voice of experience. There's someone who was had a computer in the 90s. Now I would say that search engines are probably about 40% of the efforts, of the efficient efforts that we're doing to acquire revenues. There's a lot more partnerships, media buying on other types of platforms, display media buying, mm-hmm. Et cetera.
Now, we recently were at a conference about native advertising. Are you familiar with that? Like how BuzzFeed or some of the ones where advertising content is being embedded into just the platform itself. Are
sure.
you seeing more of that?
Yes, we are. But there's also certainly a lot of demand and buzz and discussion, not just on native advertising, but around social media. And we do work in social media and these other alternatives and emerging media. But, display advertising and search is so huge and established. That's probably our biggest playpen.
Now, on the search side of things, don't our friends at Google keep moving the goalposts a little bit? I mean, they change the equation constantly, right?
All the time. I think there's somebody at Google, a vice president in charge of keeping everybody else up at night.
Well, that's job security for you, right?
Yeah, that's right.
But it's you who it's you guys that are up at night and you're trying to figure that out, or is there some newsletter that comes out to you guys and says, "Okay, we're changing the algorithm," or how does that work?
We produce a newsletter about what's going on and produce infographics. And you know, the fact is that in the early years, the search engines were easy to game. It was really easy to put up a page and not have high quality. Mm-hmm. And Google suffered. The results suffer. You get trash. Or what you click on isn't what you wanted.
Because Google is really trying to help you find what you're really looking for.
Yes.
They're not trying to be mean. I mean, they're trying to help us, right?
Yes, yeah. So the key for any business is just put up good content, and you already can sleep better at night.
Just on that. Now, there's something called a Net Promoter Score. Can you explain that?
Sure, absolutely. Net Promoter Score is a customer satisfaction survey. It's really unique. People have done customer satisfaction surveys for years, but Bain & Company went back and did an analysis of all types of questions you can ask customers. What do you like about us? Do you like your rep? What do you like about our pricing? And what they found is the single best predictor question of whether or not someone was likely to continue to buy from you is this one. Are you willing to refer this company, my company, to someone else? What's your likelihood to recommend us to somebody else? That one question is powerful because it tells people, tell you what your customer's intent is and how much they love you.
Right.
It's an evangelism question.
So now, how does your company do in that area?
Does great. I mean, surprisingly great. There are all types of ranges for net promoter scores. Airlines frequently have negative net promoter scores.
Really?
Yeah.
Airlines?
Yeah. So, you know, they're fighting not to be a minus 20 or a minus 10 because there's so much dissatisfaction. It's an unpleasant experience. B2B companies usually range in the 20s, maybe even sometimes up in the 30s. I think the national B2B average for a net promoter score in their customer satisfaction is 23. And we recently did our first net promoter score out of the gate across all of our clients and many contacts at our clients. And I'm proud to say we came out with a score of 63.
Wow. 63 seems incredibly high.
Three times national average for a B2B company.
So how are you getting your business? So I assume you're eating some of your own cooking and doing all this, some of this stuff on your own behalf, right?
You bet. You bet. We have outbound call efforts. We have internet marketing. We social media, content, all these things for our own self.
And it's working well, huh?
It works great. We have a very predictable new business pipeline.
Now, for you, since you, I guess that's how I would judge, if I was going to hire you, I'd want to see how you're doing for yourself, right? That's a good way to test,
sure,
to see how well you're doing. Now, you're targeting larger companies, right?
Absolutely.
That have certain, you've, I guess, built a criteria. I'm just trying to get a feel in order to help our listeners if they were doing this on their own.
Sure.
It's important to kind of describe in your own head to kind of figure out what's your profile of what an ideal customer is.
Gotcha. Well, usually no one is going to come to us unless they are usually a national company and they're spending at least $1 million in internet advertising.
Mm-hmm. I think we're off the hook.
Yeah, so we're, we're out. So then you identify these companies, mm-hmm, and then you have a strategic marketing plan that goes after them, including outbound. I'm sure all your tools in your tool chest, right?
Yeah, everybody who comes to us has a math problem. They're not getting enough new customers, or the customers they're getting cost too much. So they know that they can only afford to spend $100 to get a new homeowner in, for example, if they're a pest control company. But, you know, they're spending $200. So they come to us to fix that problem and then start to grow the new inbound customers.
And then the platform you use is a combination of all the resources you have at your disposal.
Yes. We build websites. For example, we own pestexterminator.com because we have a pest control company.
Uh-huh.
It has 3 million pages of content on it. And we take those leads, we persuade them, grab them, persuade them, and then put them into a call center to convert them for an appointment. So websites, landing pages, and of course, even the client's own assets.
And then so they hire you. Is it a I hire RMI and I forget about it, and now this becomes your problem, or you integrate their salespeople into the process as well?
Yeah, I've tried to get clients to forget about it, but when they're writing when they're writing a you know, several hundred thousand dollars a month, or even sometimes seven figures a month in media spend, is usually a very active engagement. And typically a client will come to us for a year contract to start out. And it takes about a quarter, one quarter for us to get up to speed and integrated with the client, embedded with them. And then another quarter for us to begin to optimize. And by about the third quarter, then we start to move the needle. Either the volume goes up or the efficiency of getting the customers improves.
What I like a lot about what I'm hearing is it sounds like it's a comprehensive integrated effort, where I can tell you, even in our own experience trying to lead this organization and step up our marketing efforts, you talk to one person and it's all about SEO. You talk to the next person, it's all about outbound calling. You know, you talk to the next person, it's all about inbound stuff. But it sounds to me like you are going to market and serving these people using all of these tools effective. I find that very attractive, and at least in our experience, maybe a little bit refreshing.
Yeah, well, Stone, that's true. I mean, everything you do should be competing with everything else based upon measuring which one costs the least. So if a newspaper ad generates a customer for $10 and the internet generates it for $100, you should be buying newspapers.
Sure.
So the key to all of it is to measure everything. Measure everything. I mean, any of the people listening to this radio show, they should be measuring everything they do. Did it work? Did it not work? And what did it cost to bring in that new customer?
Now, when you're working with a new client and do you just kind of throw stuff against the wall? Like how much of it is like you're taking educated guesses?
Yeah.
I mean, you have certain platforms have certain track records.
Sure.
But you are kind of taking educated guesses.
Well, just like with the Net Promoter Score, there are certain predictors. If you can't make something work in paid search, it's hard to make it work in other places, in AdWords. And the reason is because you can buy clicks for so cheap and cut them off so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So you can turn that dial very nimbly back and forth.
So you can use that as a research tool for your other platforms?
Yes, and the keywords that work then lead you to media that will work and things you can put in your headlines that will work.
Mm-hmm.
So
what are some of the major mistakes that you just see over and over when you first walk into a client situation? And you just, before you even pull up in the parking lot, you know you're going to see these three things.
Oh, there are two things right off the bat that most companies, the big companies, are the worst at these two things. The first thing is they don't pay attention to conversion, to converting more. There isn't a single website in North America that my team or several companies like mine can walk into and say, that web page could convert better. We could reduce the size of the form. We could change the headline. And it requires testing. And the difference is if you've got a 2% conversion rate, 1,000 people come in, you get 20 new customers. If you do landing page testing and conversion testing, you might be able to get that to 30 new customers. And it doesn't cost you any more. Those extra 10 are free customers after you've gotten the new page. So nobody tests enough conversion and landing pages. The second mistake they make, and everybody, all the major companies really make this mistake. They come to me and they say, we want more customers. And I look back at them and say, how many new customers did you get last week? And they don't know. Right off the bat, Nobody is measuring how many new customers they acquired last week. It's not even a metric on a dashboard somewhere. It's absurd. Because if that's the thing you want, you have to measure.
Right. So, now, like changing and testing landing pages, you can test everything, right? It could be the color of the background. It could be the font, right? Like mm-hmm. There's unlimited things to test, isn't
it? Yes. A lot of our clients, and we have a particular specialty. We work in a number of verticals, but we have a particular specialty in working with the 50-plus marketers. So we have a number of healthcare companies as clients and such. And we discovered we were making a mistake on a landing page, and it was a color of a button. We had a button with green copy on a red background. And imagine, people 50-plus, they have a little more difficulty distinguishing those colors. When we changed it to white copy on a black background, man, the conversion rates on that page went up.
For the exact same content.
Just on the button. I mean, something along the lines of a 20% lift in conversion rates with a small change like
now,
that.
Now, what made you think to change the color?
Oh, I didn't. My team did. My team did. They're a team of four people that do nothing but landing page testing. all day long.
So, it, and is that a, that's a practice that's worthwhile? Is to just always kind of like, I guess you have a bar set of what the expectation is, and just keep A/B testing until you, something beats it, and that becomes the new standard.
Yes, we laugh jokingly about the fact that the refinement team, their job is to lose 17 times. Because the first 17 tests are going to lose, and it takes them about that many to find one winner. But when you're talking about getting a 20 or 30 and sometimes a 50% improvement in people filling out a form, and it doesn't cost you anything for those extra 50%, all those losses are worth it. It's just like, you know, the batting average. A great batter, somebody who strikes out 70%
right, seven out of 10.
Right. So for listeners who don't really fit your ideal client profile, they don't have the $1 million spend, there's some other resources available that you've contributed to, some thought leadership and books, and there's some places for them to go and get some good information around this stuff, yeah?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, the first thing is, if you're a company at all interested in digital marketing, for example, and an ROI-based marketing, that sort of thing, getting a good return off your advertising, I would strongly suggest here in Atlanta joining things like AIMA, the Atlanta Interactive Marketing Association, and TAG, Technology Association of Georgia, and AMA and DMA. These are great organizations that help you find your way.
And hold your marketing accountable.
Yes.
Right.
And even on our own website, ResponseMind.com, we post a lot of blog posts about techniques and tactics to use that you can do yourself.
Now, in some of this digital marketing, does it work best if it's a transactional, like I'm selling something, like I'm selling, I want to get an appointment for my pest control person, or I want to sell a book or something that's a tangible item, as opposed to something that requires me to meet with somebody and then sell it into a board, like a more complex sale?
It works for everything. It works for everything. You just have to have the right value proposition. So for us, right, I have a complex sale. It takes 8 months for us to land a client.
Right, because you've got to have contact. A champion. Yeah. Someone's got to sell it in and get that person to buy in. And, like, it's a whole process, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So our site doesn't, and our marketing doesn't say, hey, would you like to be a client of ours?
Right.
It says, would you like
what's your budget? Yeah. Here, click here, and then you're in. You know,
yeah,
put your credit card.
Yes. Yeah. Would you like our white paper? Mm-hmm. So it's a very early funnel lead generation for a complex sale. One of our clients is a minimally invasive spinal surgery center. Well, you can't do surgeries over the internet.
Right.
And it's very expensive. It's almost $30,000. So that, all we want to know is, would you like a consultant to contact you? And that starts a several month process to figure out if they're even a candidate.
So what's the best way for our listeners to reach out and learn more, have a conversation with you or somebody on your team about these topics?
Just go to ResponseMind.com and check out our website, and there's full contact information there. Or you can reach me at ken.robbins@ResponseMind.com.
Well, it's been a lot of fun having you back, man. I think we should have, like, maybe the Response Mind Hour periodically. No, it seems, I mean, you just have so much to offer, and there's so much to talk about. I mean, we could do hour shows every week on this content. I mean, there's just a lot to be said and done around this.
Well, most marketers don't want to hold their marketing accountable, right?
That's
there's a whole bunch of ad agencies out there that
most ad agencies don't want their marketing accountable.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like, they call it branding, where there's no kind of real response guarantee. Just like people like you more in the long run.
That's right. That's right. That's positioning and branding. And,
right.
And that that is a strategy, but it's not the best one.
Well, you're welcome back anytime, and we will definitely have you back periodically. How about hanging out with us while we visit with our next guest?
Sounds good.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have with us Director of Strategic Support and Innovation with Expedited Delivery and Logistics, Mr. Brian Simon. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, Stone. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Did you learn anything in that last segment?
I did. That was actually amazing. I really enjoyed that.
You sound surprised.
Well, you know, I tell you, a lot of the things he mentioned are things that we deal with on a day-to-day basis as well. And that Net Promoter Score I thought was very interesting because it does give you something that you need in order to measure what you're doing with your clients. So that was great.
So tell us a little bit about what you guys are out there trying to do for folks.
Absolutely. Well, actually, on today's show, I really want to talk about another segment of our business, which is a company called Unit Shippers. And basically, we believe that small and mid-sized businesses should have the advantages of shipping savings and service normally available only to the big guys. So basically, we focus on delivering complete shipping and transportation solutions that work for people that basically ship, you know, day to day. And one of the things that we really pride ourselves in is our Platinum service. And basically, that just helps people simplify their shipping. And it's a one-stop solution, really, for everything, from overnight letters to overstuffed crates. With so many unique benefits, it's the new standard for getting the most from your shipping dollar.
Now, when a company has a shipping challenge in their business, is it something like they're doing it a certain way and they may not be doing the best way, and you guys can come in and educate them on maybe a more efficient way of getting their stuff out?
Well, not exactly. Basically, what we do from a shipping standpoint is we leverage our buying power. We have over 50,000 customers that offer significant savings to every customer. So even if customers are not big shippers, they can still save like one. And basically what happens is, you take for instance some of your normal carriers, you know, SDs and some of these places. Smaller companies go in and say, look, I need to ship something. It may cost them, I don't know, just fictitious number, if you will. It may cost them $100 to move a crate from one part of the country to another part of the country. Because of their relationship with unit shippers and the partnership that we have and our alliance and our buying power, they're able to ship that same crate potentially for 20%, 30% less than what it would cost if they did it singly.
So how did you get into this line of work? Have you always been in the shipping logistics arena?
Well, I do have a logistics and shipping background. Actually, I started in the wireless industry, believe it or not. Back when cell phones first started, some of you may remember the old bag phone. I was out there selling those actually when I first got into the marketplace. And then what happened is I started working for a larger LTL carrier, Conway or Consolidated Freightways. You may remember that. They've been out of business now for quite some time.
That wasn't your fault, though.
Was not my fault. Okay. Absolutely right. But fortunately for me, because of that transition, I was able to get into the logistics side with the current company that we're with now. And, you know, I serve as Director of Strategic Support and Innovation. My job is basically to design and manage uncomplicated, straightforward, and superior customer experiences.
And so a lot of it has to do with alliances and partnerships that you have with people all over the country. Is that where you're getting the economies of scale? I mean, how are you able to bring me this service at a lower price? What's the magic?
Exactly. Well, the thing about it is, because of our relationships with all these various companies, all these various carriers specifically, all of us, our company, basically what we do is we combine that buying power, the fact that we can use that buying power for all of our customers. So, for instance, take a small client, maybe a business like yourself, and you need to ship an overnight letter. Well, typically, if you go into UPS, it may cost you X amount of dollars. Or you may go to one of our competitors, which I won't name.
No, I sent a passport overnight yesterday.
And
I haven't gotten the bill yet from our executive suite receptionist, but I'm sure it's going to be a bloody fortune.
It could very well be. However, because of your partnership with us, if you'd gone through unit shippers, I could have guaranteed you a substantial savings because we're doing business with us. Because like I mentioned to you before, we have this unique leverage of our customer base that allows us to get those prices with those same carriers at a much lower rate.
I like it.
So that's your competitive advantage, the relationships you have with a bunch of different delivery companies?
Well, that's not totally our competitive advantage. That is an advantage that we do have. It's a unique benefit that we offer that most customers or other companies don't offer. Our competitive advantage is something that basically we adapted from a guy by the name of Joe Calloway. And basically what he says is your competitive advantage is, number one, there are three customer rules. The first rule is know more about your customers than anyone else. The second thing is get closer to your customers than anyone else. And thirdly, make an emotional connection with your customers better than anyone else. And that has been our competitive advantage for the most part. There are other businesses like ours. Basically, if you're just doing business on a commodity level, for instance, if it's just your price or if it's just your product or if it's just your service, oftentimes you may not be the low-cost leader in your market. But if you have developed a friendship and you developed a business relationship with these people and you know them on a first-name basis, that becomes your competitive advantage. That is what sets you apart from the rest of the people in the marketplace.
Now, what's an example of how you get closer to your customers, because it sounds like relationships are important. That's your competitive advantage, is deeper relationships.
Absolutely, absolutely. Let me give you an example. One of the things you do when you get close to your customers, you may make a telephone call. We have salespeople that call, they do cold calls every day. So they call someone, they have a new client, you're talking on the phone with this person, and they just happen to mention, listen, man, I'm short on time, and I don't really have a lot of time. I got to go take my son to soccer practice. Well, you've made a note of that. Okay, they have a son. He goes to soccer practice. It's about this time of day. So the next time I call that client, I'm going to keep that in mind. That maybe don't need to call in between the hours of, say, 3 and 4. They may be going to soccer practice. But the next time that I engage with that customer, the next conversation that I have with that customer, I'm going to ask them, hey, how's your son doing? How was the last soccer game you had? And what happens is, if you keep building on that and you keep taking notes on every conversation you have and every time you engage with that client, either via phone call or some other type of meeting, what that does basically is you develop sort of what we call a people file. And you know about this person, and after a while, you know, you're discussing everything from a personal level to a business level, and you develop a relationship that kind of catapults your business and that relationship that you have with them.
And you're not going to put that relationship at risk over a couple dollars for an overnight package or that or that kind of thing. Now, you're wearing a tie. In fact, you may be the only person in the studio with a tie this morning. So I'm operating under the impression you're not loading the truck. Are you managing these salespeople, like the people you're describing, or is that part of your responsibility?
Actually, no, it's not. We have an exceptional team and an exceptional sales force. My job primarily is to manage the experience, to make sure that the experience that our clients are having.
What a cool job.
It is a very cool job, very cool job. But to manage the actual customer experience, to make sure that when they engage with our customer from the first initial phone call or the first time they visit a web page or the first time they interact with anyone on our sales team, that experience from the start to finish is the best experience they've ever had.
So you're using some of the same tools that Ken mentioned earlier.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's why I was familiar with the Net Promoter Score, because that is definitely something that you want to. You do want to measure everything. You want to make sure that when you engage your clients, even from the initial handshake or the initial smile, a lot of times we find that companies or other customers, they really lose it just with that initial greeting. Just the hello sometimes just doesn't come out right.
So what counsel, if any, do you have to offer our listeners when there is a problem? Because there's going to be problems. If you're running a business of any size and complexity, we're going to screw up. How do you handle that? How do you coach your folks to handle that?
You know, the first thing you have to do is you have to be honest enough to acknowledge that there's a problem. A lot of times people skirt around the issue and they play the blame game. They blame it on another department or they blame it on another person.
Yeah, we blame it on Kevin. That's our go-to blame.
Gotcha. Well, they blame it on someone else and nobody takes responsibility for the problem. The first initial phone call, we train our people that as soon as they take that phone call, they own that situation or they own that issue until it's resolved. We found that customers enjoy that type of personal service. They enjoy knowing that, hey, I can call Brian if I have a problem. He's going to make sure their problem's resolved to the end. Oftentimes, though, a lot of times we have people that call in, they're upset, they're disgruntled, they're mad. And typically that first 5 or 10 minutes, they're just screaming, you know, to the top of their lungs. The best thing to do is first just listen and listen attentively. And then typically we ask the very next question we ask is, what's the main thing? What's the number one thing? I know you mentioned two or three things, and we, of course, you want to acknowledge those things that they mentioned. But you say, well, what's the one thing that if we could make this right, it would better our relationship? And 10 times out of 10, they name that one thing.
What a disarming question. That's a very disarming question. And then if you come through on that.
Absolutely. It just improves the relationship. And it's a great thing. It's a great thing that when you can acknowledge those things up front, you can admit, hey, we made a mistake. We were wrong. But everybody makes mistakes. You know, and your clients realize that everybody makes mistakes. The most important thing is that you fix those mistakes and you fix them in a timely manner. You do it quickly. You do it clean. And you make sure that you don't make that mistake again.
Now, what's your sweet spot of client? You mentioned clients of almost every size.
Absolutely. We try to target small to medium-sized businesses. Mm-hmm. And the reason being is because it's the small guys, the guy with the local butcher shop or the guy with the local bookstore that doesn't have the buying power as, say, of some of your larger businesses or bigger companies. So the small and medium-sized business is a company that we're going after that we're seeking to utilize our service so that they can get the same shipping savings as some of your larger customers.
Now, is that client somebody who has never done shipping before and now they're just getting into shipping, or are they somebody who has been shipping and they're looking to change vendors?
Well, typically, it's going to be the client that either has not done much shipping or a client that's already shipping. Most of our client base are clients that are already shipping. They're already doing business. They're already shipping packages from day to day. But what we try to do is we first meet the people or introduce our concept to the people is, listen, we know you ship every day. We understand that. But what you're paying for your shipment, all the different phone calls. For instance, you have a small customer, a medium-sized business, and they're shipping something. They have to call so many different people. There's somebody in processing. There's somebody in receiving. They have to call the carrier, make sure the product got out on time. With our company, it's a one-stop solution. You deal with one person. They take care of everything on the back end. We got an extremely sophisticated back end process that tracks the packages. And if there's a problem, we negotiate all of those shipping dilemmas for you so that you don't have to go through all those phone calls.
Now, if somebody is going to switch, is there a way to try you guys out? Like, how do they make the transition from an old, you know, different shipping company to your company?
Absolutely. It's a very easy transition. What we like to do initially, it's just a simple transaction. You start out, you give us an opportunity to utilize our service, give us an opportunity to sell our service and utilize our services. And we do just a simple transaction. You may want to ship just one package, or you may want to ship a couple things for a week just to compare the prices. So the transition of moving into what we do and becoming one of our clients is very simple. One of the first things we do is make sure you have a dedicated service team member. We want to make sure that you have someone that you can contact every time.
A real human being.
Not Star
6.
Exactly.
Okay.
Not cool. Star 6, a live person. You know, a lot of companies out there really, and Ken may be attest to this, they do most of their business via online presence. Everything is done online. It's done by the click, or it's done by the SEO search and things of that
right.
nature. What we offer is really, it's almost like the old traditional way of doing business. There's a live person that someone can speak with. And that's a rarity in today's time, in today's, you know, business world. But it's something we find that people still appreciate.
Everything he's describing to me sounds like something I'd be willing to pay a premium for. But yet we opened up the whole conversation with you've got economies of scale that bring me a better pricing structure.
Absolutely.
It sounds like a pretty attractive package to me. So what's the best way for our listeners to reach out and learn more and talk with you or somebody on your team?
Absolutely. Listen, we have an outstanding guy. Our vice president of sales is a guy by the name of Kevin Kinsler. And his direct email is going to be Kevin, that's K-E-V-I-N, .K-I-N-Z-L-E-R, @unishippers.com. And his direct contact number is going to be 678-725-1540. Or you can reach me directly at bsimon@logisticsdell.com.
So this Kevin character, is he going to be as articulate and even-keeled as you are? Is he?
Absolutely. Everything I've learned, I've learned from him.
Fantastic. Well, it's been an absolute delight having you in the studio, man.
Thank you, Stone. Thank you. I've really enjoyed speaking with you and Lee and listening to the other guests on the show.
You going to hang with us while we visit with our other guests?
Absolutely.
Fantastic. All right, next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have with us from Solar Energy USA /Net Zero. We'll get the full story on that in just a moment, Mr. Perry Bell. How you doing, Perry?
Stone, thank you guys for having me on.
We are delighted to have you. You've been very patient. I couldn't tell if you were taking notes or not because you got the iPad gizmo here, but you look like you were very attentive and we're getting something out of these last two conversations.
Yeah, I was taking a lot of notes. I really liked what both these guys had to say. Ken was getting to the point of things that you do basically with business. You want to make sure that you obviously deal with the metrics and you measure everything that you do. Steve was getting to the point of dealing with relationships and managing to the customers, and all those things were great topics.
So now you're in the solar energy business, that's correct?
That's correct. We're basically an energy company. What we do is we help people with energy reduction first, and then we work on energy production second.
Now, are you bullish on solar? Or you're energy agnostic?
I'm energy agnostic because basically the whole point of all of this is creating something that works for us as a country to begin with. We're built around helping small businesses become successful. And the main thing is we help other people get in business as a licensed business of our brand. But as far as the solutions go, we're kind of, I guess you would say, technology neutral because it really doesn't matter what the solution is. We want to make things more efficient and work better.
So what is the state of the art, state of the union with respect to solar and, for lack of a better word, alternative energy sources? Has it kind of peaked and now we're all settling down, or is there a great fervor? We're going to see another wave of trying to use algae to power our cars, or where are we headed with all this?
Well, there's a lot of different aspects to the business, but one, if you look at things, how centralized power is very difficult to work with. For example, it's our mainline energy. It's very important, and we all require that to exist. but we need to subsidize our consumption. For example, when you use power, the electrons came from possibly hydroelectric, they came from wind, they came from natural gas, they came from nuclear, they came from coal. So it's a blend of all those things as well. So why not throw something else in there that makes sense, like solar? The only unique thing about solar is none of us can be autonomous with nuclear. We can't build a nuclear facility in our yard. We can't do any of these other things. We can't do hydroelectric in our yard. One person may have the ability to harvest water in a stream that's running through your backyard, and especially like what we've had in the last couple of weeks here locally. But generally speaking, the solar is the only place that allows you to get autonomous. And, you know, Ken even has the ability to – he's taken the steps to go create his own I guess it's kind of off-grid, but it's a water system. And yeah, Ken, tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I just dug a deeper well.
Yeah.
so I wouldn't have to connect. I have teenage daughters, and I was running out of water.
Yeah.
And had to dig a deeper well.
So what you did is you said, all right, well, here's a cost that's going to be that I don't want to be exposed to, so I'm going to go ahead and take care of this myself. And so you created that level of autonomy on your water side.
That's a driving force.
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't that the name of an old gospel song, Dig a Deeper Well?
Yeah.
And Driving Force is a metal song, I think. Yeah.
So what's behind the name Net Zero?
Well, we started out as a solar company exclusively, and as we got into the business and into the field, we understood what the real interest of the customer is. And the customer's interest is to their best interest. They don't always know. So they're asking us for answers. So as we get in, basically they want to reduce their fixed costs. Now, power historically hasn't been so expensive that people have been motivated to reduce that. Now that power is becoming more and more expensive, it's becoming very challenging. And 10, 15 years ago, we weren't in competition as manufacturers against the rest of the world. Now we are. So whereas a manufacturer down the street is directly competing with manufacturers overseas, their costs are very important. And so that's why you got one person doing three people's jobs, because they've worked with reducing their costs on their labor side. They're always fighting for pennies on everything, even on the advertising side, marketing side, on procurement of product. And so now power is a big issue. And then power is becoming more and more costly to produce and to deliver, and where everybody's having to pay for it. So what's in our best interest as a country and as small businesses is to reduce our fixed costs in that level so that we can be competitive in the global market. So they look to us for answers. What do I do? Well, I can throw a solar system on your roof and reduce your power. Okay, well, that's good. But are there things I can do before then that make it make more sense? I can change out 4 2x4 fluorescent light fixtures and create the same energy reduction as I can production on a 1 kilowatt solar system. And that's a lot of words in that one sentence, but it means something. But it's a culmination of all those. And it's not too different from what Ken does on the marketing side. He doesn't just go after search engine optimization. He doesn't go after just social networking. It's a blend of all of these things that makes sense. So you have to create a plan, an action plan that makes sense for you as a business. And generally, we can help people do that. One solution isn't a one-size-fits-all, just like in some of these other businesses that we're talking to today.
So now the power is an interesting topic. It's kind of a little controversial in some area, but isn't there a Georgia Power initiative going through legislation now?
There are, but keep in mind, understand where the power companies are. If I were to give you a monopoly and then start to take that away from you, that would be difficult for you to pallet. And Georgia Power has a responsibility to deliver mainline power to everybody, and they've been granted this monopoly. But they have a lot of fixed costs involved with that, but they're guaranteed certain amount of percentages of profits. Me as a small business owner, and I'm not guaranteed any profits from anything, so I have to fight for everything that I get as a business owner.
Right.
And I have to build my business properly, and I have to be accountable for everything that I do. So my metrics are a little bit different than, say, somebody else's metrics, maybe. So, yeah, there are a lot of initiatives that are going on, but they have certain places that they get power from, and it makes sense, and they can count on that. So everything that they do, when they bring in money as a company, is for 20-year increments. So if they make an investment, they have to deal with this for 20 years. Power and technology is changing rapidly. So delivering power from a coal facility 40 miles away and then having those transmission lines deliver that power and then at 12 o'clock at night when there's nowhere to deliver it to, dump the power, but we still have to pay for it as customers. Centralized power is tough to deal with. But keep in mind, it's not their first day. They've been making power for years and delivering for years. So they have their economies where they slow down the turbines in the evenings and whatnot, but you also have line transmission loss. So it's said that you lose anywhere from 30 to 40 to 50% of your power created through the transmission loss in delivery of power.
And it's just
on centralized power.
And gone altogether?
There's nowhere to go.
It doesn't.
There's no storage of power.
Right?
Yeah. So, but keep in mind, but it's not a something that's just some arbitrary thing that happens differently every day. I mean, they know exactly how much power they're having to deliver, and they're basically power companies and power facilities are built for July and August, which is peak demand. So that facilities, the creation has to be for that. So what happens the rest of the year? Well, they have to slow down production, and there's fixed costs and everything that goes with that. And the power companies are not the bad guy. I mean, they're doing what they have to do to deliver power to us. We just all have to pay for it. But is there a better way? It's like anything else. Just what worked 100 years ago may not be the best solution now. So is it better to have less decentralized power or delivery?
So
maybe.
Tell us about your client base. Is it all over the map, or are there a couple of verticals that just really lend themselves to working with you?
Yeah, our main client base is going to be more on the commercial side because they're paying attention to their fixed costs on the electrical side. We do have a residential division, and we have that in multiple states, but commercial is the main size. So what happens is we'll go out to groups that are consciously trying to reduce their power, and it's on their agenda, and then we help them achieve that goal.
Now, are some of your clients kind of trying to make an environmental impact as well?
Well, I mean, that's a good flag to wave. But if it doesn't make financially, then nobody's really taking that approach. I say nobody, but even the people like the bigger box stores that are waving that flag, it's a financial thing that they're doing. It makes sense.
So it has
to
make financial sense.
Yes.
And then if it makes environmental sense, that's a bonus?
Yes.
This is where I get to say that all of our programming is dolphin safe and gluten-free.
Gluten-free, right?
And has been from day one. This is not some new fad thing we're implementing.
Yeah,
exactly. So tell me about like electric cars. You're seeing like hybrids and electric cars pop up more now. Are they really environmentally friendly, or is it a good move for a typical individual to go that route?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of debates on that side, but I mean, most of the debates are people who don't have one. I actually have, I have a hybrid. I have a hybrid electric, and then we have an electric car as well as a company.
You have a sole electric car.
Yes,
only
sweet.
So if you run out of power, you're just
I'd be on the side
like
of the road,
pushing around. Right?
Well, I mean, just no different than gas. I mean, I know how long I can go before I need to put fuel in my car, so I never just.
But aren't there
that.
Variables like if it's hotter or colder outside that can impact how long the battery life is?
Yeah, but there's a lot of communication on there that's telling you how much power you have. So, but I mean, total electric cars are a different scenario. Plug-in hybrids are pretty unique, but when you look at electric cars and look at electricity in general. If I'm pulling oil out of the ground in the Middle East, I'm putting it on a boat, and then I'm bringing it to a refinery, and then I'm putting it in a tanker to deliver to a gas station, and then I put that fuel in my car, and then I use it. There's a lot of there's a lot of impact in doing that.
Sure.
And then the other side is if I plug into the wall, I've got coal, nuclear, hydro, and all those things that I've created to create these electrons to charge this battery. So what's the difference between the two? Well, the truth of the matter is plugging into the wall is probably, it is less environmentally impactful than the other. But that's not the big deal. The big deal, that's where solar comes into play. Solar comes into play where you can take your consumption of electricity and offset that. So there's a certain amount of kilowatt hours that a car is going to use per mile. It's usually 1 kilowatt hour per mile. I mean, I'm sorry, 1 kilowatt hour per 4 miles. So it's about 3 cents a mile on an electric car. But I can create that with solar, and without incentives or anything, I can have my solar system paid for in basically 2.5 years, and then I have my fuel source for free. I'm not going anywhere. I'm not paying the power company. I'm not doing any of those things. And so now I've got my fuel source for free. Now, you're offsetting that consumption. So I may plug in at night, but I'm creating the power in the day, and I'm running my meter backwards, so to speak, in the daytime. But at night, I'm plugging in, and I'm reclaiming that energy that I created.
So the solar would be used primarily just to fuel the car and not anything other than that? Or could use it in your house? You could use it.
Yeah. I mean, it can be used for anything, obviously. So, yeah, when you put solar on any object to create energy, you're offsetting your consumption that you're using. If you're not using it, you're pushing it back out to the grid.
Are you seeing commercial companies going for that? Or is that a hard argument to make?
On the electric car side or just solar,
like,
in general?
Now you have solar. Now you can use it for your fleet. Like, is that really happening, or we're just too early on for that?
I don't see it happening a whole lot. I see it happening with individuals. Yeah. And we as a company do it. We create more energy. We're a net zero company. We have basically a 10,000 square foot building, and we have enough solar on our building to accommodate our 15 employees and our warehousing and all of those things. So we create more energy than we use, and we have a car charging station outside, so we use our extra energy for the car charging. So we still walk away with a zero power bill.
So how do you get to have a conversation like this with your commercial people that you want to be serving? Do you do some of this magic that Robbins was talking about earlier?
How do I reach them?
Yeah, how do you reach them and just get ahead? Because it occurs to me, if you can sit down and have this level of conversation with someone who's owns these buildings or that kind of thing, then it's probably going to build a pretty strong relationship, and they'll probably do work with. I just wonder how you break through all the clutter and get to have this level of conversation.
That's a good point. And to, like everybody's saying, they're going to find you somehow, and then you got to find them. So we have an outbound effort and we have an inbound effort. So people reach out to us and find us online. We do have a pretty decent organic presence, and we have a pretty decent marketing program. It's not as complex as what Ken approaches, but we do have social networking. We do have our organic side.
So you're doing all this stuff.
We have to. I mean, that's a validation of who you are, because most people that are coming to you aren't just looking you up in the phone book and comparing you to the next guy. They need to be educated. So a lot of our information online is to help people get educated and understand what they don't know so they can understand what they want to know.
I'll tell you what, if you ever do have an unhappy customer, I'd route them to Brian. Don't you think you could? Do you hear him talking about how to handle an unhappy customer? He was great, right?
Absolutely. He reminds me a lot of my brother, and my brother does great with that. And it's just basically helping people. Ultimately, people want something, and as a business, you want to help them get what they want. And it's as simple as that. And if you can deliver that and have a relationship with somebody, it's not just selling them a product and going away. It's having a relationship. And for us, no matter what the size is, there's usually going to be some other ancillary type relationship things that we're going to deal with. So a lot of times on the commercial side, we're doing a lot of school systems, municipalities. Mm-hmm. We deal a lot in the private sector as well, where we're changing out lights. So we can get a big pickup in fixed costs by reducing the wattage that people are consuming on the lighting side. So you start with that because that's the low-hanging fruit, so to speak.
That's the typical point of entry for you guys?
It is, absolutely.
So you kind of identify some light issue that they might have, that you have a solution that you can fairly simply fix and make an impact.
Yeah, and your impact's going to have is pretty broad. You can go in and lower the wattage, of course, by de-lamping, but you're delivering full spectrum light. You're improving the light system that they have, and
lowering their electric bill.
Electric bill, which is easily quantifiable.
Right.
You know.
I'm just fascinated because this is your baby, right? I mean, you built this thing from the ground up. You are absolutely to be committed, and I can't imagine some of the trials and tribulations you must have had along the way. That probably would make for another segment sometime. But how does it feel to kind of have arrived at least where you are now? It must feel really good.
It does, but, I mean, we've grown so rapidly over the, getting into our fourth year, that you're always going to have your challenges, but it's always exciting. So, but it feels great, but at the same time, you never are taking that approach. You're saying, all right, here's where we need to be. So, I'd sit back and drink a beer one day and say, we've actually done pretty good.
But so lighting and windows, are those the two low-hanging fruit?
Well, on commercial, you're not dealing with thermal improvement. If you're dealing with residential, thermal improvement's great. You can do windows, spray foam insulation, any other types of insulation, lighting and stuff like that. And
I have one of those Nest thermostats. What do you think of those?
I think they're great. I mean, it's just like, that's what I need. And I've got spray foam windows, solar thermal. I've got it all, but I don't have one of those, and I need that because I'm always having to go turn it back on. So,
I can do it on my phone.
Yeah, that's what I do. That's what I do.
Well, I just love trying to help people get the word out about this kind of work. This is good stuff. This is fantastic. Thanks for coming and visiting with us, man.
Thanks for having me. I think we ought to do like a debate version with a radio name like Stone. It seems like there would be some type of conflict.
Like a count, pointer, yeah, like, count, point, counterpoint. That's what I'm trying to remember from Saturday Night Live.
So what's the website if somebody wants to learn more?
Well, netzerousaindustry.com, and that's for the commercial side. And if you just want to learn about solar in general, go to solarenergy-usa.com.
And what if they want to drive your electric car? Where do they go?
They come, and that's funny because at our office we have a charging station. We don't charge people to charge up. So every time we look outside and we see
Leaf. Who's that? Like we don't know. What's the electric car you own?
We own a Volt and we own a Leaf and we also own a hybrid, basically a nice Ford Fusion hybrid. So we have all those things.
Well, thanks again for coming in, man.
Well, thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it. It's a pleasure meeting the guys here as well. It's funny because I think you guys just attract good business because when you're listening to Steve talk and even probably Kevin as well and Ken, it's cool to hear how people deal with customers because you can't have a good business if you're not doing the right things. So.
Hey, how about staying with us? We got one more guest.
Absolutely. I look forward to it. Thank you.
All right. Lee, it's time for the headliner. All this undercard stuff, we're done with that. We got the man that's going to bring it home for us. And it's our good buddy over at Training Pros, who I mentioned earlier in the broadcast. Of course, they underwrite Learning Insights, which we are here on Wednesdays. But we'll probably talk about a lot of stuff learning related. But I think one of the things we're going to talk about is the experience that we had out at the big ASTD powwow not too long
ago. That's right.
So without further ado, please welcome back to the Business Radio X microphone, Mr. Steve Capon. How you doing, man?
I am doing great. And I'm probably not going to be as interesting as talking about electric cars and stuff like that.
So that was kind of cool.
We're going to talk about training.
Electrifying.
Everybody's
training.
All excited about that, I'm sure.
So get us caught up, man. What's been happening over there in your shop? There's a lot going on at Training Pros these days.
There's a lot going on. We're growing our business. We're recovering from that 3-day conference that we did with you guys and trying to turn those initial contacts we had with those prospects and folks who did the interviews with you into business, which is what it's all about, right?
That is a fun way to get a chance to visit with prospective clients and with some of your best clients and referral sources. It's a fun way to do it, isn't it?
It was. It really gave us an opportunity, and I'm sure you're going to introduce it a little bit more, but it gave us an opportunity to have multiple conversations with the type of folks and companies that we want to do business with.
Now, why don't you educate our listeners a little bit about what Training Pros does that's different than other staffing companies?
Well, generally, Training Pros works with typically Fortune 500, Fortune 1000 companies, providing any type of contract consulting talent that they need to design, develop, and deliver training to their employees. So when they don't have the internal expertise or capacity, we have a talent pool of almost 8,000 consultants we can pull from to provide to our clients. What makes us somewhat unique in the staffing industry is that first, we specialize in training. Okay, we're not a broad-based.
So you're not the IT guy.
We're not the IT guys. We're not the ones who provide forklift, drivers and leaf blowers to, provide that type of labor. It's very specialized in the training field. Second, and what makes us really stand out in the industry is we have local teams of relationship managers, and you've met a number of them in Atlanta who work with our local clients. Providing our type of services, and they provide a very high-touch approach to working with them to provide the type of consulting talent that they need. And they themselves have been on the other side of the table. They're not just salespeople pushing bodies. They're people who've been on the other side of the table. They have 20 years of experience in learning and development themselves and have been external as a consultant. So they truly understand what our clients are trying to do, and they work with them on a long-term basis, really getting to know their organization and build deep relationships with them, which is a kind of common theme that I've heard today from these other business owners.
Well, it seems that relationships is a theme here today, but in your business, when you have relationship managers that have selling responsibilities, is it difficult to train somebody who's been a trainer and a facilitator into being a salesperson?
Well, we don't look at it as sales. We look at it as we try to find people who are good at building relationships.
So the relationship is the focus, and facilitators are good at relationships. That's the thing.
Well, a facilitator is not necessarily good at relationships. Just because you're really good in a classroom teaching a course on customer service doesn't mean that you're going to be good at building relationships with somebody. You'll find that sometimes people who are, you know, extroverts in the classroom are introverts when they get out into the real world. So we look for people who, you know, they have over 500 connections in LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. They love to go hobnob at professional association meetings. You know, they love to go out and meet new people, and, you know, they're comfortable in a social setting, you know, in a circle of people talking about what they do. And people who just really love to build a personal network and stay in touch with people. So, you know, our approach is a little bit different.
It sounds to me like it's a lot different. I think it's all focused on cultivating that relationship and delivering good work. And there is no sales tool like good work. That's a fantastic sales tool. And we've had an opportunity to meet some of your relationship managers, and they just exude credibility, and you can tell they're genuinely invested in trying to help the client accomplish their objectives. And it's a lot of fun. It's very energizing to be around people like that. So how does it work in the very beginning? If a company has not worked with you before, what does that first set of exchanges look like? What kind of conversations does a Leanne, for example, have with a brand new client? Are they profiling needs, or how does that work?
Well, there's homework that goes in prior to having that initial meeting with a prospect. You know, we want to learn as much about that company as possible. We want to learn as much about their learning organization as possible. And we want to learn as much about that individual that we're going to meet with as possible, so that when we go in and have that initial conversation with them, we can really connect with them on a personal level and really tie what our service offerings are to what the responsibilities are of that person. Okay, and if we're able to do that, you know, it's like a natural conversation. If I'm talking to a training manager who has responsibility for delivering customer service training to a call center, and I tie into that conversation our experience designing training solutions for other companies that have, you know, call centers, and talk about how we've delivered customer service training to other organizations, and then they realize that, oh, and this guy is also local. He actually got in the car this morning, came over to spend time with me to learn about me and my organization. Oh, and he's done this stuff before. Wow, that's really different compared to these other companies that have a call center in San Francisco or New York who are just cold calling me to try to get business. You know, oh, and by the way, and I saw this guy over at the local ASTD meeting, and he sits on the board. You know, so that means a lot. They're vested in the profession, and so he gets it. And who do I want to do business with? Somebody I can trust and who knows my business, or somebody who's going to be calling from a call center?
And so the idea of underwriting a local radio show, or in your exhibit at the big ASTD booth, having radio there where you're interviewing your clients and association executives, that just – it all seems very wholly consistent with your approach.
Well, it's all about building that relationship, right?
Yeah.
And so our approach with working with a Radio X is what it has been, to position ourselves as thought leaders in the industry and have compelling opportunities to have touch points with these prospects. So when we are inviting a local learning leader, maybe a director of training, to be on our participating in our interviews at the ASTD conference, first, I have a touch point with them to give them a call and invite them to be on the show. Second, they say yes, and now I've got a couple opportunities to kind of prep them for participating on the show. And then I meet them in Dallas at the conference and greet them before they go on the air, and then we talk afterwards. And we end up talking a lot of shop about what their company's doing in the industry. And then afterwards, I set up a time to meet with them to deliver the audio from that interview and deliver a picture of them framed being on the air with the headphones on in front of a microphone and the big Training Pros logo behind them. They love that. And we're stroking their ego and presenting them as an industry expert, which is what they are. And we're building that relationship with them. And then, by the way, at some point they ask, well, tell me more about what you guys do at Training Pros. And they're like, oh, really? That's interesting. I can use those type of services. You know, and then of course, you know, we're now into building that relationship, and they know what we do, and now it's a matter of staying in front of them. So at some point when they have the need, they're going to pick up the phone and call us.
So now for your ideal client, is that somebody that has somebody in a training role and then they need extra trainers, or is it somebody who doesn't have anybody that's doing any training at all?
Well, it could be kind of two categories. Smaller companies, they may be a one-man or one-woman shop, you know, a director of training, and they just bring in whatever services that they need to train their employees, okay? Typically, a sub-$50 million company, okay? Our typical client is going to be a Home Depot or a Walmart, where they have a sizable training organization, but now they've just maybe the business has identified a big need that was not originally budgeted for, and the business writes a check to design a new training program, but the internal training organization does not have the capacity to deliver that program. And so Home Depot will pick up the phone and say, hey, you know, Leanne, we need three instructional designers and a developer, because it's going to be a mobile learning training program, to help us build this program.
Lots of specialists, so they have access to like a ton of different specialists through your organization that they'd never be able to hire, you know, internally.
That's right. Oftentimes, our clients have a need where they don't they're not going to hire somebody on a full-time basis to maybe program mobile learning applications for tablets for their sales force. They know it's a short-term need, so they'll turn to a training pros. We'll provide somebody for 3 or 4 months to build this mobile application. The project's done. They leave, and now that headcount kind of falls off their roster.
So what's next for you guys? You're going to continue to grow and expand? I mean, because your organization has grown tremendously in the last few
years. Right. How many markets are you in?
We are currently in 12 markets, and our target within the next 3 to 4 years is to be in the top 20 markets across the United States.
Wow.
We currently have over 20 relationship managers who serve those markets, and we need to build that to about 60, where we have a critical mass of local relationship managers who are working with the top 75% of the Fortune 500, Fortune 1000 company in those markets.
And what's great, and I know we already touched on it, but these relationship managers, they really are plugged into the profession. So while you've got the training industry using different media, using different strategies and going to web-based learning and all kinds of different stuff, you have the Leanne's and the Dave's and those folks. They're plugged into all that, and they're plugged into a network of thousands of people with specialized skill in all those areas. So they're staying in tune with those advances every day, right?
Oh, that's right. You know, for example, when we're meeting with a client and they're kind of kicking around the idea of maybe being able to launch some type of mobile learning strategy for their salespeople, they want to use like tablet technology, you know, whether it's iPads or, you know, some type of Droid tablet, you know. Our relationship managers can tap into experts in the industry to have conversations with our clients or connect them with other clients. For example, children's healthcare is using single source content that they can push through their tablets as well as smartphones, computers, and so we can connect our clients to other companies who are kind of out in front with these new advances and really help them in terms of evaluating whether that's a strategy they want to employ and to be able to share best practices.
Now, you mentioned mobile and tablets a bunch of times. Is that one of the emerging trends you see in the staffing industry?
I wouldn't say necessarily in the staffing industry, but certainly in the training industry is a lot of our clients are looking at being able to push kind of performance support out to them into the field. And salespeople are a great example. You know, I was meeting with Heidelberg earlier this week, and they're a big printing press company. So they sell these large solutions, right? Big printing presses for maybe packaged printing. And they're looking at being able to enable their sales force with all the information they need at their fingertips, which is probably going to be delivered through some type of tablet technology. So they need information on how to sell the product.
Which is kind of ironic for a printing company, right?
It is. They're moving away from a 1,000-page binder to a tablet. You're absolutely right.
Well, I tell you, I just had a blast at the conferences that we've done with you. One of the things I enjoyed is we get a chance often to interview thought leaders, speakers, keynoters, people that are celebrities in that arena. That's a lot of fun. And I know that your relationship managers now have direct conduit to those thought leaders in the industry. And the other thing, and I don't think it's out of school to share this, it was fun for me to realize that, because, I mean, these are very senior-level people in the learning space that we're interviewing all day when we're working with these guys. And we had the one guy with a very well-recognized brand. Well, you tell the story. He said he wouldn't even normally come in the hall.
Right, in the expo hall. It was
that was Rob Lover.
Is that
Yum Brand?
Right, the Yum Brand guy said that normally he doesn't go in the expo hall because he gets swamped by every vendor out there. But he came in to be interviewed to talk about, I think it was about global learning and how Yum deals with that. And
but it just shows what you can do with the power of investing in a relationship and genuinely trying to serve people and help him turn around and serve his constituency, as opposed to just jumping out there and trying to get
and stress balls at people.
well, that too, and not trying to sell. It's all that. It's that approach. It's that mindset.
And we've learned over the years that these trade shows have been a big waste of money. We go there and we have a booth and we have somebody standing out there. Maybe maybe I need to wear a skirt or something. But we do something to look better, looking to attract potential customers. But we found that those are just a really bad investment of money because we don't get the right buyers, right. And they're not serious. They just want to stop by and pick up some type of tchotchke they can bring home for their kids. But you're right. So we're making investments so that we can have the right type of conversation with the right type of people and deliver the right type of message with them and build a relationship.
So did they look at you, they being like the organizers, did they look at you like you were crazy the first time when you told them you were going to have radio in your booth? Or did you even tell them and we just showed up?
We just showed up. We don't tell the organizers because, one, we don't want our competition to know about it.
There you go.
And secondly, I think they see all the traffic and just all these people congregating around our booth that it just kind of clogs up the walkways at the conference.
I felt bad for the people across
around
the
us.
Way.
Like the way that you had it scheduled, we had a high-value target from start to finish of every trade show day, mm-hmm. right? There was somebody being interviewed every minute of every day almost. And then you see the other booths where hours are going by, hours, where they're just talking to themselves or texting or they're not even engaged with anything.
That was us before we engaged Radio X. Guarantee it. Praying that somebody would walk by and talk to us, make eye contact.
Well, speaking of relationships, we have thoroughly enjoyed ours with you guys. Look forward to doing a lot of more interesting stuff, and it's always a delight having you in the studio, man.
Well, thanks for having us today.
Well, before we wrap, let's make sure that our listeners know how to get in touch with your folks at Training Pros. Way to do that.
Our website is Training Pros or training-pros.com. And you can also, I guess at least in the Atlanta market, we have five other relationship managers. But you can certainly just try to contact Leanne, which is LEIGHANNE.Lankford, LANKFORD, at training-pros.com.
Well, thank you so much for being part of the show, and thanks to all of our guests. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next week on Atlanta Business Radio.